today, because Saturday and Sunday, I want to, and I'm hoping Chris will be doing the same, is that I'm going to be devoted entirely towards laying out the chapters.
Oh, yes, the book.
The book. Dandy, like Andy.
Hey-o, Webcomics Weekly.
Hello.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another installment of Webcomics Weekly. It's going to feel like there were two this week, because we posted one earlier, didn't we?
We did indeed.
Well, good. We were behind schedule, and now we're going to double up to catch up. So, another installment, Webcomics Weekly, Half Pixel Gang, in the house tonight, in the his house, is Brad Wigwam Geiger, evil-comic.com. What up, Brad?
Banded together from remote galaxies. That's all I'm literally reading as we speak.
writing in his artist edition, brand new books from LA as we speak, as we're doing the podcast. He's still working, never stops. Dave, never stop, Kellett.
Sheldon Comics, not drugs. Hey, how are you? What am I even saying? I don't even
we're
know.
So distracted tonight. It's going to be such a piecemeal podcast.
The Blizzard of Lizards cover, Dave, is absolutely gorgeous, by the way.
Oh, thank you. This, I think, by the way, is the best looking cover that I've had yet on a Sheldon book, and I'm immensely happy with how it came out.
Well, you know, we just got done having a little pre-show conversation about what we wanted to talk about, and this just hit me. What kinds of things have to go on the cover of a strip collection? Absolutely have to go on, and what things maybe should never go on.
Oh man, that's a good topic. Wow.
Yeah, it was a flash of lightning over here.
What was it?
What kinds of in designing a cover? And I'm just talking the front. Well, we can talk front cover, back cover. But in designing a cover for your book, what sorts of things absolutely must go on, and what kinds of hierarchies do you guys put into this, and what sorts of things do you see showing up on covers that you think, oh my God, what a waste of space.
I wish I could find the old story. I think it was Carmine Infantino from DC mentioned that the best-selling comic book covers all had the same thing. So for a while, DC was putting that on all their covers. It was like the color purple and a monkey and I can't remember it.
Did it really have a monkey, or are you just saying that?
No, I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. Oh God, I will find it.
I think I read that same article. Was that the article, Scott, that it talked about how he, I mean, again, Carmine was such an incredible, prolific cover artist that he would draw the cover and then ship it off to the writer, and the writer would have to write a story that would match that cover.
I think so.
Really?
Yeah. That used to happen in DC's Silver Age, I believe, if I'm placing it right. He would draw the cover, you know, hey, Flash, you've just been killed by your own birthday cake. And they'd ship it off to a writer, and he would have to write that story.
Can you imagine being that writer? You'd be like, you son of a... trying to figure out a story. Why is Flash fighting a giant octopus? Oh, God, now I have to write the story.
It, all of a sudden, you know, oh, God, now I've got to have, you know, running underwater, and is he just as fast underwater, and why an octopus? And, yeah, right. I mean, I could they showed some of the covers that he would crank out, and he would put people into those types of positions. Yeah. Or either that, or it was the other way around. It was completely hokey, and it was just a marketing thing.
While Scott's looking for that article, I got a couple thoughts, Brad, now that my brain has had a moment to think about it, about what needs to go on a cover. Shall we get into that?
Yeah, I want to hear this.
Okay, so I think, let's start first with what I lack. I think if your strip has a logo, I think that's a go-to. And here's why. It's not necessarily needed for any individual book. But when you have book two, book three, book four, book five, people want to see the unity that the logo represents from cover to cover and color to cover and character to character that each cover will have, you know. And I think Scott's PvP books do that really well, and I think Brad, your Evil Inc. books do that really well. Mine don't, but because I don't really have a logo for Sheldon that I'm super in love with. So instead what I've done is I've created what's commonly known as a trade band. And what that does is, like any sort of branding, it creates a cohesiveness from book to book so that when you place them side by side or spine to spine, they all feel like a family, despite whatever colors or characters are on there. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like lining up four boxes of Tide. If you ever notice how they do it from a design perspective, the trade banding will continue from cover to cover of that Tide box so that they all feel like a single unit or present a whole image by themselves.
I've done that with mine with my trades.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where you have I have colored banding at the top and bottom. Logos are pretty much in the same placement. I also have like a radial button in the bottom left that says volume whatever it is, and that's always the same despite the cover design.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that people don't think about when they're preparing their first book is you've got to prepare for success with your books. And what I mean by that is if you're doing it right, you're going to have a book two and a book three and a book four. So don't pick a size that's gigantic and contains 700 strips because it's going to take you another 5 years to build up book two. make it a size that's repeatable. Make it a style that's repeatable, and make the overall design of your cover something that will flow well into a book two, so that when they're sitting on a bookshelf together or on a convention table or in a comic book shop side by side, it creates a sense of wholeness and a holistic image for them when they put them side by side.
What I've done with Evil Incorporated is I literally use the same cover design, and I just change the dominant illustration and maybe a little bit of colors. In other words, volume one had mismatch, and it had like a halftone dots down the spine, and it said annual report, volume one, and then my name, and it had the Evil Incorporated logo. And then the volume two was exactly the same layout but with some different colors and Lightning Lady on the cover. And right. The whole idea is that, like Dave is saying, you can put these side by side, and they're all kind of in the same family. They definitely look like they belong together on your bookshelf. And since I'm not half as dynamic as Dave and Scott, I can't keep thinking up titles for my books. It's just impossible. I think we covered this once. I had one good book title, and that was Dilutions of Grandeur. And I used it on the first Greystone Inn book, and then I was out. I had no more ideas. So I just came up with an idea of calling it Annual Report, and then every book is going to be volume one, volume two, volume three, et cetera, because I can't keep coming up with these names. A guy like me doesn't come up with Blizzard of Lizards. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, neither did Dave.
That's a big topic.
A little uncomfortable laugh there over in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's a doff of the cap to Scott, actually, because we were brainstorming names. Hey, I'm allowed to be honest. We were batting around names one day by IM or by phone. I don't remember what it was.
I think you were Scott, here. Weren't you here for a Cape last year?
No. But we were doing this, I think, over IM. Is that? And you said, "Hey, how about a lizard and a blizzard?" You had a slightly different version, and I was like, "Oh, there's something great there." And then I changed it around to Blizzard of Lizards. And, yeah. But it's all Scott's doing. I mean, that's a
oh, please, that's come on! You would have come up with that on your own. I'm just like giving you a hard time about it.
but I'll tell you the one last thing that I think covers need to have, and I have variously learned and unlearned and learned this again, is that if you don't have a single character shot on the front, like what Brad does and what a lot of, say, Marvel or DC comic books do, where, you know, say, Silver Surfer's flying out towards you. If you're going to have a multiple character shot or even a single character shot, a dynamic, energetic pose will sell better than a static pose. Mm-hmm. And I learned that. My book two does that really well. The second book that I have has everybody sort of jumping around and flying around. And one of Scott's books, I don't remember if it's Going But Not Going Bananas. What's the one where he's on the ride outside of Walmart?
You know, Rides Again. Things?
Rides Again.
PvP
if you
Rides
look at that,
Again.
If you look at that PvP cover, there's such a dynamic feel to the, especially the front and then the back cover, that it catches your eye, and it in a way, without having any words, there's a joke to it. So if you've got a humor strip, and this is also true with an adventure strip, see what you can communicate just by the expression and pose of the characters. That a static image wouldn't get you.
I've got two more tips.
Let me finish this out real quick by I found the quote.
Oh, go ahead.
Legendary DC Comics editor Julius Schwartz once said that if you slap a gorilla on the cover of a comic book, then you are almost guaranteed to see an increase in that issue's sales.
Oh my God. And thus was born Gorilla Grodd.
That's hilarious. That's like my wife's theory that any joke can be made funnier with the inclusion of either a donkey or a midget.
To get to the other side of the midget.
Well, I've got two more tips on covers that I'd like to share. Originally, Evil Incorporated Annual Report Volume 1 was called Evil Incorporated Annual Report 2005.
Hmm.
And I was going to make it, a collection of 2005, and then the next one was going to be Annual Report 2006, et cetera, et cetera. And I had a guy that was doing distribution for me and getting him into comic shops saying, you got to change that. You can't have anything with a date on it sitting there on a bookshelf and expect it to sell. Because nobody's going to walk in today and really get excited about buying Annual Report 2005. He said, call that Volume 1 and then go Volume 2 and Volume 3 and so on and so forth, because, the date really hurts you.
Well, and one way to prove this to yourself, if you think that Brad's lying, is the next time you're in a Barnes & Noble, go into the humor section or the comic section, and there's always those white collections that says best editorial cartoons of, and it's always some date. And in your own mind, see how unexcited you are to pick up the best editorial cartoons of 2005 book versus
right.
the best editorial cartoons of 2007 book.
Well, here's what I did.
Brad makes a great point there.
Here's what I did on my naming convention. When I first started doing the collections of with Image for PvP, I wanted to call it the PvP Archives, Volume 1. And, to kind of match the feel of webcomics having archives. And Eric Larson over at Image said, that is an awful name. Archives is so boring. You think of a little nerd that works at a newspaper that's got to go in the back and do research. Come up with something more fun than that. So I came up with the idea of doing a parody of the Garfield book, Garfield at Large, because that was the first book that inspired me to make comic strips when I was a kid, and I thought I'd do PvP at Large and use the Bookman font. And I would do that for the first issue. So when Eric Larson saw it, he said, oh, Scott, this has to be your naming convention from now on. Just do all the Garfield books in order. So, and he was serious. So it would be PvP at Large, PvP Gains Weight, PvP Sits Around the House.
And then eventually it's like book 15, PvP Kicks Odie. It's all the
PvP, his biggest book yet. PvP Lasagna Forever. Okay. After I did the first one, I said to him, I was a little worried that maybe Jim Davis would be appreciative of one book, but if I did all of them, he'd get mad. And looking down the line, it was going to get pretty silly quick. So I decided I would stick with the convention of PvP and then kind of a verb thing. Like, first it was PvP at large, then PvP Reloaded, PvP Rides Again, PvP Goes Bananas, and now the fifth book is PvP Treks On. And boy, Brad, you were smart not to pick a naming convention, because eventually you start running out. It's like PvP on the pot. PvP chicken sandwich, yeah. But
PvP walking around.
Little topper to that. Little topper to that story. I was at the Baltimore Comic Con this year, and Larson came by and said, "Hey, check it out! I'm collecting. There's so many Savage Dragon trades now that I'm not just collecting issues into a trade. I'm collecting trades into a big trade."
Wow!
And the first volume is called The Savage Dragon Archives. And I looked at him and I said, Archives, huh? And he goes, yeah. And I said, sounds boring. Sounds like a little nerd. And he goes, oh, yeah. That works for me.
That's hilarious.
Oh, that's funny.
But, yeah,
the one other thing to build on Brad's point about date, actually, is that if you are, whether you're self-publishing or going through a publisher, the publisher will probably already know this, but if you're going to be printing in December of 2007, or if the book's going to come out in December 2007, if you can finagle it legally or with the printer or how you feel about it, it might be worth saying printed January 2008. Because there's a type of person that looks at the copyright page, like much like Brad was saying before about doesn't want to buy a book that says 2005 on it. And if you can get another year out of it, you might even find that libraries and retail stores more will pick it up if it has a later date on it. And that's just a thought.
That's interesting.
Someone, a publisher, told me that once, that that's a trick they use. It's kind of like when they say the 2008 cars are here, you know?
Right.
And it's like February of 2007. You're like, well, wait a minute.
How about the back cover? What do you guys think about what goes on the back cover?
I never know what to do. I hate it.
Back covers to me are like having to insert something funny here. I couldn't think of anything. No, I agree with Scott. I hate doing back covers. My standard philosophy is that if I haven't got you by virtue of the fact that you either already know it or didn't like the front cover, then the back cover is pretty much there just to seal the deal, really, you know?
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of people, when they pick up a book, heck, I do it. When you pick up a book and you're like, I wonder what this is about, you flip it over immediately to see what's on the back.
Yeah.
But if it's like a comic strip book and there's nothing on the back, I'll crack it open. And I would rather people do that. So I usually just put a little image on the back, a little picture or something.
That's actually – yeah, well, I mean, I do – for that same philosophy, I tend to put three strips on the back, you know, the ISBN, a little blurb of text, and the title repeated. But you're right, though, Scott. I mean, people basically just want to see what's the feel of this strip. Am I going to like it?
Yeah.
And along those same lines, one thing that I learned from my first book, watching how people pick it up at conventions, is that you better make sure that the first 2 to 3 pages of that book are some of the best stuff that you've got in there.
Mm-hmm.
One thing you could do to ensure that is take the best strip from the series, from the book, your best foot forward. And on the first page should be a title page, and it should have that strip under the title as a little...
a taster?
Yeah.
That's not a bad
idea.
One
thing that should be on the back, I will say, should always be in the back cover of your books. I didn't follow this rule until my brother was slapped me up the side of the head and said, well, what are you forgetting here? Your URL.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep. You want to sprinkle that in a few places. You also want to put that on the copyright page and probably somewhere in your bio. And here's why. There's all sorts of people either at conventions or bookstores. They might not buy the book right now, but they liked what they read from the sample, or they liked what they saw at someone's coffee table or in someone's bathroom that they were visiting. And you want to make sure that they see that URL somewhere in their travel through that book, so that when they get home an hour later, they can look it up online.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel about putting quotes from other people about you on the back of the book?
I am not only done with doing that, I'm done with providing it.
Oh, it's so good not to be the curmudgeon.
I'm telling you, I am the curmudgeon. So done with that. I cannot tell you how done I am with it.
I'm kind of with you on that one, Scott. But go ahead. I don't want you to feel alone out in the woods on this one. But go ahead. I want to hear why. I want to hear your thoughts.
Well, here's the thing. When I first started in comics, I met Jeff Smith, the guy who does Bone, at a comic book signing, and I said to him. I said to him, if I ever get a comic book take, because he really liked my work, and I said, if I ever get a comic book, will you give me a quote? And he goes, yeah, sure. So I chased him down when my first book came out, and he's like, I tell that to everybody. And then he turned to me and he said, it doesn't matter. It's not going to help you at all. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. And my God, is he right? It just makes you feel good. I don't think anybody has ever flipped over a cover and gone, I don't know about this. Wait a minute. Scott Kurtz likes it. Well, who put this in my cart? And
on the phone, the whole cast of Different Strokes chimed in and loves the new Sheldon book. I'm buying it.
I love putting fake stuff on it now because I
the beat of just one.
I am just sick of it, and I'll tell you something else. I'm sick of writing intros. Oh my God. I never want to write another intro, and I don't even want to have an intro in my book anymore. It's like, you want an intro? Read the next page. It's the first string. I mean, I am so
Dave,
done with
it. We've done a good job of winding Scott up tonight.
Oh,
I know,
man.
This is good.
People ask me for quotes, and you know, I tell you what, I do like writing intros for my friends because I actually care about my. I mean, what I'm trying to say is. When I have a close personal relationship with a strip or a person that does the strip, that's who should write the intro because that's what those are about. But so many people ask me to do that, and I don't really know them or the strip very well, and I'm just making it up. You know, like when I did it for Chris and I did it for you and I've done it for the Penny Arcade guys, that makes sense. People know that I'm friends with the Penny Arcade guys and they want to see what I might think because it's an insight to maybe our relationship. But and then it's extra content and not just something that you're putting up because I don't know. I just think the whole thing is. What did I put on? Hold on a second. Talk amongst yourself. I need to go grab my book. Hold on.
Okay.
Well,
Brad, mental note to you, don't ask Scott for a foreword for your next
I know I'm sitting here thinking, geez, I might be the only one that's never asked Scott for a foreword or an intro or a quote for his book. And
telling me that the friendship is over and I shouldn't have asked him for a foreword.
What are you guys saying?
Nothing. You're still great. We love you.
I'll play
nothing.
This
hi, hug.
Here's what's on the back. Here's what's on the back of my latest book, Volume 4. Read PvP Daily at pvponline.com in huge fonts. And then below it, it says in quotes, irreverent, witty, funny, and touching.
Oh my.
Are all words we wish critics used to describe PvP? But I'm telling you, people see those things, irreverent, witty, funny, and touching, and I bet they never read as far as are all words we wish critics used.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's
yeah.
like the, it's like how Sony Entertainment got in trouble for making up those critics to review their movies, you know?
Yeah.
Because they knew people only look at the big words. They don't look to see that it's like Tim Bibbins, traffic reporter for the Des Moines, you know, local access TV channel.
Right.
And that even was made up.
I've got a similar feeling to Scott on that, although I really don't mind doing it, and especially, you know, like Scott said, if you know the person, you're familiar with their work, it's really kind of a joy to do. But for me to ask someone to do that, I guess my Midwest comes out of me because I think now I'm putting that person in the position of trying to sell my book. Because really what they're saying is you need to say something that's important enough, witty enough, engaging enough, and gripping enough that it's going to turn over a book sale or two for me. You know, not only am I writing on the popularity that this person may have just with his name value alone, but they've got to say something really interesting or else it's a waste. I mean, nobody can say, you know, hey, Brad Geiger, he's a good cartoonist. Nobody can give you back a quote like that. It's got to be something that's really interesting, and let's face it, all of the interesting book quotes have been done by Bob Hope in 1963 when he wrote every introduction to every humorous book that hit the market.
Yeah. You know what? Here's my working theory on it that my brain just came up with. It probably does impact somebody somewhere, but the volume of sales have to be so high for you to even notice it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you've got a John Grisham thriller, well, maybe having a quote from an ex-president on there will sell maybe another 100 or 1,000. But unless you're selling a 500,000 books, you wouldn't even see that added number. You know what I mean? So the volume.
Unless it's Oprah, who it's not going to help you.
Right.
That's what we should all be trying to get.
It's probably one of those things that's just been going on for so long in publishing that everyone's afraid to be the first one to not have some sort of justifiable quote or forward or something.
I'm so glad I got to be the curmudgeon. I feel so good.
I know, it's a good feeling to be Brad,
yes.
By the way.
What else? What else do I not like? Move on.
Oh, hey,
can I tell you, though,
I love
Brad's Midwestern philosophy, though, of, oh, I couldn't imagine asking someone to say something nice about me. That just sounds so hard to do. Oh, gosh, I'm sure, you can either like me or dislike me. I'm just going to stand over here in the side of the room. You don't need to say anything nice about me. I'm just Brad Geiger. Okay, sure.
Oh, for sure. If you don't like it and you want to say that you think it's crap, I'll print that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you know what? In fact, here, I made you a sandwich, and you can eat that if you like, because I'm from the Midwest. All right, sure.
I can't even do that. I can't hold that accent for too long.
You just have to imagine yourself as like a 40-year-old housewife from like Minnesota or Wisconsin, and like you live in a loveless marriage, and your kids your kids are all failing you, and you maybe are a little afraid that one of them is gay, and you're just really having trouble processing it. That's what that voice is.
It's been too long since I've been in the Midwest. All I can do is Southern Baptist.
Do Southern Baptist then. Let's hear Brad if he was a Southern Baptist.
Now, Dave, I don't know how you feel about this, but I don't know. I don't know how you people operate up in L.A. But I was wondering if maybe you could do an intro from my book.
Now, you can't. That's all right. It's all right.
I don't know if you people do that. I know you spend a lot of time running around doing drugs with homosexuals up in California. I know you're all going to hell. I know that.
I do know that. That's a given. But
before
I'm just
you go
wondering.
To hell, if you just had a couple nice things to – in fact, I wrote something up. If you just want to sign it, I appreciate that.
I know where you're going after you die, and before you go.
If I could just catch you before you go.
Yeah,
because
afterwards it's going to be too hot for the ink to really grip onto the paper. So if you could do that for me, I'd appreciate it.
That'd be great, sure. All right, so what's our next topic? Brad, you had a question?
I apologize, you guys. I completely derailed us because I just got fascinated with the idea of covers. But
no, we've never talked about books before. That's a good topic.
Dave?
Yes, Scott.
Dave, I just want you to know that you wrote a wonderful intro for me, and I just want to let you know that I really appreciated it.
Well,
I wrote it myself, assigned your name to it, and I put it in because that's what Jesus would want me to do.
Oh, wait a minute. Can I talk about a pet peeve? Because someone just did this to me recently, and it drives me nuts.
Yeah,
This is my pet peeve, is that don't ask a cartoonist to give you a drawing at a convention and then either put it up on your site or your book as fan art for your stuff. That's my one request.
You're kidding.
In a curmudgeonly way.
Somebody did that to you.
Yep. And when I draw something as a personal gift from a person to a person, all of us. So just be very conscious of the rules of etiquette there when you use someone's drawings or that sort of thing.
Did you contact the person and confront them?
No, because I have enough Midwesterner in me where I wouldn't even know what to say to that, Brad. I wouldn't even know. Oh, how could you even say such a thing, Brad, to somebody?
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, well, you know, we've all had versions of that happen to us. I know that's happened to both of you.
The worst I ever saw was my friend Frank Cho gets a lot of that, and especially when he was drawing girls. He would draw something for someone. He would see it on eBay for $3,000 the next day, going for $3,000.
Yikes.
So he made a rule, no girls. I'll draw headshots of the animals, but no women. Every once in a while, someone comes up with a sob story. Could you draw a girl? Or someone kind of presents themselves as they don't really get comics. They just, you know, the worst I ever saw. And then you find out later that someone who is into comics sent them. Like, you'll see men sending girls up. And you'll see one time, Frank told me that someone sent his mentally disabled brother or child to come get a girl sketch.
Whoa.
And he saw it on eBay. That's how bad it got.
That's I had one story that I was going to throw out there, and it just got trumped by the end of your story.
By the retarded kid?
Yeah. I saw a guy send his kids up to the guy that I was sitting next to at Wizard World Philly. A few years back, and he was a Spider-Man artist, Alex Saviak, a great guy, by the way. And he was like, yeah, "Listen, I don't sign a whole bunch of, you know." They brought in literally cases full of stuff, and he was like, "You know, I'll sign five or six, but I can't sit here signing all day if somebody brings in their entire comic collection." And I saw a guy send his kids up because it was right near the end. And he's like, "Well, you know, you can't say no to kids." And he sat there and signed tons of this stuff for them. And I was driving away, and the guy that he had turned down, I saw him out on the street, and the two kids that he had said yes to were meeting up with the guy and handing the stuff off to him.
Oh,
it was amazing.
That's bad.
But
so the message here, life, it stinks.
Yeah,
that's our message.
Well, Scott, you wanted to talk about you wanted to pick up a thread from the last podcast. And by the way, let me say to both of you personally, thank you for all the nice things that were being said about me last week. That was very nice to hear.
And that's right.
As for the rest of it, you know what you can do. But but Scott, you wanted to pick up a thread from last week, and I wanted to get us back on track there.
You mean RSS feeds?
Feed burner.
Way to throw Scott under the bus there.
last week when we talked about Super Mario Galaxy, what? I slept. Okay. RSS feeds, I've been afraid of them because if people are reading my comic strip in an RSS feed, then they're not coming to my website. They're not seeing ads for my store. They're not seeing my blog posts. They're not seeing they're not running my advertising. And it just scared me. So I have had the RSS feed for PvP link back to my strip with a pretty little graphic that says new strip. But I do get a lot of negative feedback on that. A lot of people want the strip in the RSS feed. So My friend Gary turned me on to something called feedburner.com. Now, there is a paid version of it, but this is a free service. It lets you you sign up for it, and you give Feedburner your RSS feed, and it handles your feed for you. And it keeps detailed stats of your feed. But not only that, it lets you put Google ad code in your feed. So you can run your Google ads in your RSS feeds.
That's a great thing.
And this that is a partial solution to letting people read the strip in the RSS feed and still have them see my ads. I've had it run for 2 days, and I've learned that I have, if we look at yesterday's stats, let me go look it up real quick. I'll edit that part out. No, I won't.
I'll hum quietly while you're looking.
Okay. According to Thursday's stats, I have 10,956 subscribers to my RSS feed. And I have a reach of 6,320. And what reach means is the total number of people who took action, meaning they viewed or clicked the content of my feed. So that means that out of 10,000 people that subscribed to my feed, almost 6,500 went back to my website.
And that's probably about right for any given day.
Would think. And it also breaks it down as to how many views and clicks each post got, so you can see what posts are getting the most clicks.
Oh, no, that's good.
Yeah.
Have you checked your Google ad stats to see whether there's a rise in advertising money coming in?
Well, I didn't put Google Ads into the actual RSS feed until today, and I'm looking at my RSS feed, and I still don't see ads in it yet. So maybe it takes a while for it to update, or maybe I haven't done it right. I thought I did.
I think the broader sort of carryover that we were talking about last week too is that. The trick, unfortunately, is that you can't fight this stuff forever and not. So you might as well figure out a way to make it work for you, and that's what Scott's doing with Feedburner.
Right.
And I think from a even broader spectrum from that is that you have to recognize that no single source of income, you can't rely on any single source of income forever in perpetuity as your sole breadwinner. So you can't rely just on advertising online. Because the honest to God truth is, technology might find a very simple way for the mass majority of people online to be blocking your ads with a single click, and so that could all disappear in a heartbeat. And we've all seen those sort of paradigm shifts on the web come and go. So you need to have a mix of original art. You need to have a mix of merch. You need to have a mix of T-shirts and books. You need to have a mix of advertising thrown in and appearances. And I think all of that has to add up to your income. You can't rely solely on advertising. Or, you may find very suddenly that's endangered.
Well, you bring up merchandise, and we haven't hit the mailbag yet. Do you guys want to do a mailbag question before we leave, or do we want to talk about the RSS for a little bit longer?
Oh, sure. Well, I think I kind of trod over what Scott might have wanted to do as a final point for that. I'm sorry, Scott. Go ahead.
Well, no, the final point of it is the I'm not the kind. You know, we've been very. It's something I'm kind of learning here as PvP gets to be 10 years old. It's easy to be on the winning side, but it's not easy to be on the side that's losing. So, boy, it sure is easy to be the new guard that says, you know, not that I ever did, but, whoa, web is where it's at and print's dying, so screw you, Mr. Newspaper Man. They're all coming to my website. Okay. You know, so we throw around things like, look, print's going to just have to learn to change because that the web's where it's at. Well, that's easy for us to say because we're the web. But, you know, if the trend is that more people want to read my comic in their RSS feeds, I can close my eyes and cover my eyes and go la la ba 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 and pretend I don't see it. Or, you know, I can try to figure out how to make that work. And, you know, like I said, Feedburner's ability to put, if I can get it to work, to put Google ads in the actual feed makes me a lot less scared of the people that are in my readership that want to read PvP in a feed. And so I just wanted to bring that up during the show because that makes it a lot less scary.
Yeah.
But once, I mean, it, the other thing about that is that once you put ads on your RSS feed, and if you, like some of us, have your blog posts showing up on the feed and your strips, at some point you've got all those things. The people might as well be going to your site. It certainly would be a lot more attractive, you know.
But I guess what Scott's saying though, Brad, is that if you acknowledge that some people prefer not to go to sites at all and to use their RSS feeder, get the maximum value you can from them as a reader, while still allowing them to use RSS as their main entry point. You know?
Well, I agree with that completely, but what I'm saying is that as we bring the, I mean, right now RSS feed is a certain thing widely across the web, and if we keep adding things to the RSS feed, which I'm all for, sooner or later there's not going to be a whole lot of difference between going to the feed or going to the site.
Yeah.
Once you get your blog posts updating there and advertisements and maybe a little something for your store,
just have a crappy version of your site.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That's essentially what we're kind of saying is that because another thing, Brad, is too, is that anybody that's savvy enough will figure out a way to script out whatever they don't want in your RSS feed, you know?
Right.
And the other people, the vast majority of people, won't. Let's use the words that it is. I give away Sheldon on my website. I give away Sheldon for email subscribers, and I give away Sheldon for RSS feeds. And the one thing that all three of them have is they all have the strip, they all have the blog entry, they all have links to the archives in the store, and two of those three have advertising. I don't have it on the RSS feed by choice, but I very easily could. And the fact is, I do get emails every once in a while that says, hey, could I just get a feed of your comic? And I say, no, the unfortunate point of entry is that if you get this for free, you get X, Y, and Z along with the comic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe the solution would be to say, all right, if you do a subscription or something, but I just have no desire to do subscriptions. I just don't believe in that model, you know.
What does she think?
Who is that cute voice?
Yeah, no kidding.
That's my 2-year-old Max. You want to say hi, Max?
That was adorable.
Yes.
Can you say hi?
Hi.
Is Dada home? Yeah.
Mama.
Mama's not at work. She's downstairs in the kitchen.
Dad
is not at work.
Hey, Brad.
Okay. Yes.
Real quick, just ask about RSS feeds and see. Let's see what.
Okay, Maxie, what do you think about RSS feeds? Okay, he doesn't like them. I got a real quick bye bye.
I think Max supports Maxie. My notion that RSS feeds are a problem.
Yeah, I mentioned RSS and he was out of here. I mean, it was just like, forget about it.
You know, didn't what's funny, though, is that Max is our audience in 15 years, and he's going to be like, what do you mean you're putting ads in your hologram bean brain to brain? That's ridiculous.
Max definitely does not like RSS feeds. He's definitely what we call old preschool.
But I'm that's a hack joke.
Jeez.
Oh, groan.
Well, hey,
yikes.
That's the best I got, my friend. Well, hey, boys, we're looking at about 45 minutes here, and I am staring down the face of a mutiny if
no,
I don't come down for dinner pretty soon. So
not a problem, Brad.
That's good. This has been Web Comics Weekly with Dave and Scott and Brad and Max. And, you know, to recap, RSS feeds, who knows? intros and quotes on the back, I hate them. Boo, boo, bad, don't do them. And web comics are awesome. So
and never ask a Midwesterner for an intro.
Oh, no. I just didn't feel right about it.
Oh, gosh, no. I wouldn't even know what to say. You know, why does my opinion even matter? I'm just a single person. I don't even know.
I don't even know what I say, yo.
All right, everybody, so you've been listening to Webcomics Weekly with our pals and yours, Brad Geiger from evil-comic.com.
Thank you.
Scott Kurtz, pvponline.com.
Thank you.
And I'm Dave Kellett over at sheldoncomics.com. Not with us this week, Chris Straub over at starslip.com, and you can find all of our work at halfpixel.com. Thank you guys for another good show.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Peace.